Today's the day U.S. goods shipped into Europe get hit with EU tariffs. I'm David Brancaccio in New York. Today, the European Union began charging a penalty on a suite of U.S.-made goods. This is in response to the Trump administration's steel and aluminum tariffs. Presumably, if there's a freighter full of Harley-Davidson motorcycles from York, Pennsylvania, Milwaukee, or Kansas City docking at the port of, say, Rotterdam, those bikes will get the 25% tariff tacked on. U.S. cranberries, peanut butter, tobacco, orange juice, and more get the same treatment. I asked the BBC's economics correspondent Andrew Walker when the tariffs will eventually hit consumers and producers.
Bear in mind, those dealers that sell Harley-Davidson motorbikes will already have some stocks in, which they've got in before the tariffs came into effect. There'll be supplies of orange juice around the EU, and in that particular case, orange juice, of course, there are alternative suppliers, so that the impact on European consumers might not be that great. So we'll be looking at a significant delay before things do work through the supply chain. But there are those cases, like bourbon, whiskey, Harley-Davidson motorcycles, where consumers, I think, probably will be looking for a very specific product, and they will be paying more eventually, by the time all the effect has been passed on from retailers. And yes, it may be the case that there will be an effect on the suppliers back in the United States in time as well.
Andrew Walker, thanks. The Europeans are taking this dispute to the World Trade Organization, a process that could take maybe a year. Most of the new EU retaliatory tariffs today are 25%, but we see that U.S.-made playing cards, you know, like for gin rummy or cribbage, are getting a tariff of just 10%. Checking stocks, the FTSE in London is up 0.8%. Dow and S&P futures are up 0.5%. Now, this is like giving birth while still on the honeymoon. Just days after AT&T purchased Time Warner, AT&T has produced a new product. It's a streaming video service called Watch TV, $15 a month, cheaper than AT&T's other one, DirecTV Now. The new one is a kind of basic cable feel. Marketplace's Sabri Benishore has more on the strategy here.
Many cable subscribers have noticed something very irritating.
Their cable bill has been going up year after year, and customers don't need hundreds of channels.
Jeff Kagan is a wireless analyst. Now, on top of that, a lot of young people aren't even signing up for cable. Eric Brannon is with IHS Market.
What they're going to do is they're A, going to have a cell phone first, and B, they're going to take a broadband subscription. They want high-speed data access.
AT&T, of course, sells both cell phone service and internet access. But what it's now doing is throwing another mini cable service on top of that, and customers can watch it on lots of devices. Frank Lavam is with Raymond James.
If they can use this content to give a better experience that customers really find valuable, customers will think twice about switching to another provider.
When AT&T and Time Warner merged, Lavam says it got easier and cheaper for AT&T to offer Time Warner channels to its customers. As more content providers and distributors merge, the strings tying cable channels to cable boxes are fraying. In New York, I'm Sabri Benishore for Marketplace.
Not everyone gets a chance to study the economy in school. Anyway, who doesn't need a brush up? Marketplace helps you continue your education in a way that we hope is smart, accessible, and hopefully even a bit fun. Your donation is not only an investment in your own learning, but also in helping us make more people smart about the economy. And that, we think, is good for everyone. To learn how you can help, visit marketplace.org/investors. Thank you. The oil producers' cartel OPEC is meeting in Austria today. Where are decisions on production headed? Well, there's a readout on this. It's the price of crude oil, up 1.2% at $66.32 in New York. In figuring a price, there is supply, and of course, there's demand. Spencer Dale is group chief economist at BP, a company very interested in energy demand. Its newest statistical review of world energy is out, and it's what, Spencer? It's got to be up.
We are. Energy demand grew quite substantially last year by over 2%, stronger than we've seen on average over the last 10 years. A lot of that was driven by stronger economic growth, but also the pattern of that growth was concentrated in sectors of the economy which are particularly energy hungry. So that also contributed to that strong growth in energy demand.
Big story North America is natural gas. There's a lot of it. It's driven prices down if people heat their houses with it, to the concern of people in the coal industry. But when you actually look at the statistics, what's going on, first of all, in North America?
In North America, energy demand or energy production of both oil and gas continues to grow strongly. One striking feature of last year's data, for the first time ever, the US became a net exporter of gas. So it exported more gas than it imported.
People concerned about a more sustainable planet Earth should, whatever they do, not consult page 6 of the BP Statistical Review of World Energy. There's a chart over here in black, green, and red. And how are we doing on non-fossil fuels?
Huge growth of renewable energy, as you and I know, strong growth in wind and solar power. But at the same time, nuclear power has been falling off. And it also hydropower as well. And so the overall share of non-fossil fuels going to the power sector, surprisingly, actually a little bit down on what it was 20 years ago as a share of all the energy going into the power sector.
All right. So I look at the black line that symbolizes coal for electricity production. It's flat, like since time immemorial. It doesn't really move much.
It is literally flat. The share of coal in the power sector in 2017 was 38%. Guess what the share of coal was 20 years ago in 1998? It was 38%. This really matters. We know if we're going to really get on a road to Paris to meet those climate goals, the sector where we need to make most action and make most improvements is the power sector.
BP economist Spencer Dale with his BP Statistical Review of World Energy. It's a fascinating topic. Spencer, thank you.
Thank you.
And a federal judge in New York has just ruled that the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, set up after the last financial crisis, is unconstitutional. Now, since federal judges in Washington have ruled it is legal, this could end up at the Supreme Court someday. Republicans and bankers argue the CFPB is too independent, since the U.S. president can only fire its director for cause, not just because a president wants to. Our executive producer, Nicole Childers, digital producer, Janet Wynn, engineer, Jake Gorski. It's the Marketplace Morning Report from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.